As Halloween approached this year, our minds turned to scary costumes, trick-or-treating, haunted houses, and of course, Tony Sandias reading The Raven. The poem has been a holiday tradition here on the show for the past decade, so we thought it might be nice to check in with Sandias and explore the roots of his long relationship with Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, you know when you're in maybe fourth or fifth grade and they send around the scholastic books and they have the pamphlet and you look through them and you order them? Well, I ordered this because it had a skull on the front of the book and it was Eight Tales of Terror by Edgar Allan Poe. And I think that was the first time I actually encountered, and I found it very hard to read as a fourth grader, but I kept going back to it. And then about seventh grade in English class, we read The Telltale Heart. Now, at this time, I don't even think I knew what a monologue was, but I remember reading it thinking, this would be so cool to do as a performance. And since then, I've done it about 500 times as a performance. So, you know, it's one of those things where be careful what you wish for, but it's been a wonderful thing because I love the piece. So I came at it that way, basically through school and scholastic books. And then I got determined to keep reading it, and I used to keep a dictionary by me because I would always encounter words I hadn't a clue. And again, seventh, eighth grade. But I just stuck with it, and I found it so, well, first of all, just so scary. And when I'm a big horror fan. I love horror movies. And a little later, I came in contact with all those wonderful Vincent Price, Roger Corman Poe movies, yeah. And they were really fun. And then I started reading more and more and got into the poetry, some of the other stories that aren't horror stories, because there are some that aren't horror stories. You know, Poe, he was trying to make a living in an age where there weren't copyrights. So he made $7, for instance, for The Raven, and it was reprinted hundreds of times. People literally made fortunes off of it while he was alive, but he only saw the initial money that he got for it. So he had to be savvy, and he had to give the people what they wanted, which was horror stuff. He tried to branch out and write comedies, and they just weren't selling. So he kept going back. And I do think that his life prepared him to have a particular insight into what can be the horrors of living.
Yeah, he's sort of like the original goth kid, you know?
Yeah, he really was. I don't think he intended it to be that way, but it's just the path that it went. Mm-hmm. A very tragic life, and so.
Well, now, it's one thing to read and enjoy Poe and even see movies and things, but then to make that leap to portraying Poe.
Yeah.
Taking on this persona, which right. I think one of the things I like about your Poe is it's different than other Poes. A lot of Poes are almost like, you know, you see that iconic picture of, right. of Poe and they jump right out and they're you know, almost to a T. They've got the... But yeah. Your Poe has a little bit more flexibility and a little more realistic portrayal to
me. Thank you. I mean, I think my relationship with Poe and his work, I think of myself primarily as an actor who has a specialty of interpreting Poe's work. And when I realized that I had enough material to put together a one-man show, which I call The Poe Show, a very witty name, The Poe Show, I realized, well, you've got to become, because I used to just do The Telltale Heart or The Black Cat and do it as the narrator of the story. And then I realized, well, you've got to become Poe. If you're going to do a show called The Poe Show, at a certain point, you have to be Poe. And the way I structured it is at the end of the show, one of the things Poe did, particularly in the last couple years of his life, because he died at age 40. He was achieving some degree of success in the last year or two of his life, which is very ironic. But one thing that he did was he did a lot of readings at either soirees and sometimes in theaters where he would read his poems and lecture because he had a lot of very specific ideas about poetry. And so at the end of the Poe Show, I say, journey with me now. The year is 1847, and we're in a small literary soiree, or we're in a theater. And at that point, I become Poe. But the Poe that I'm portraying there is a Poe who is really obsessed with his art. And so in some ways, it's an easier Poe to portray. The Poe who is the tragic, romantic character is a lot of ways more painful.
Yeah.
I'm actually doing a show right now. There's a company called Through the Fourth Wall, and this past summer they did a show. It was very a few years ago. There was a famous production of Macbeth in New York where you walked through from room to room, and the play happened all around you. I think they were inspired by that. Again, the company's name is Through the Fourth Wall. So they put together this show, and they wanted me to do it. And I did a couple small things with them, little performances, but I wasn't able to do their show. Well, they're remounting it, and just working on the lines, it's the Poe at his most desolate, and he's just lost Virginia, you know, the love of his life. And this is a guy who, he lost his mother, he lost his stepmother, and he lost his wife, all to the same illness. And these were the three most important women in his life. So it's a harder thing to do. I mean, it's just emotionally, you have to sort of get yourself ready to go to some very dark places.
Yeah.
And so that's the Poe that I'm portraying in this show.
But I think it is important to remember that Poe was a working artist, a working writer, and scrambling. I mean, he was working really hard to make a living as you know, all the time being this romantic, tragic character.
And, you know, if you look at the collected works, there's a lot of material there for a person who basically had 20 years of active writing life. And the beginning of that, one could argue, he was, you know, an amateur. He considered himself a poet. He didn't write his first short story till actually here in Baltimore, which is an interesting connection. It's the first time he actually dealt with prose. So, yeah, he was, there were no copyright laws, so he could only get a few bucks for everything he wrote. And he supplemented it by being a critic, worked in various literary journals, and he was a pretty savage critic, to be perfectly honest about it. And it was, you know, if you think about trying to be an artist in that time period, first of all, again, there's no copyright laws. You're not getting a whole lot of respect because we think of ourselves as kind of literary second place to England. Most people are looking to Europe for the real literary inspiration. But Poe was one of those people who said, no, there needs to be a strong American literature. And because of his work, we have that.
Well, so Poe is one of your recurring characters. But I know you're an accomplished actor, director, writer in your own right. What are some of the other characters that you've been playing around with these days?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've been doing a lot of stuff with a company called Symphonic Stage Shows. And it was about 5 years ago, I got a call from the BSO that they're doing a production where they're trying to mix theater with music, symphonic music, and it's about Beethoven. And they hired me, and I did this show at the Meyerhof with the BSO, and we did it in Bethesda at Strathmore. And it was great. And since then, they every time they have a show, the Dee Dee Bali, the woman who runs this, has hired me. So I've played Beethoven for her. I've played Sigmund Freud in a production about Mahler, because Mahler had gone to Freud as a patient. Not a lot of people knew that, but that was the whole premise of the show. Wouldn't it be interesting to be a fly on the wall there while Mahler's talking to Freud about his problems? I played Sir Isaac Newton for them. So I've done these amazing characters. As a matter of fact, we have a show coming up November 14th at Strathmore and the 15th at Meyerhof. And I'm playing Isaac Glickman, who was Shostakovich's friend, mentor, agent, and helped him or tried to help him navigate the waters of Stalin, because it was very difficult. You talk about difficult time being an artist in Stalin's Russia, or Stalin's Soviet Union, excuse me. That would enough be enough to send me to the gulag right there. It was very tough. And so it's a wonderful show. We did the show in Philly with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and we're going to reprise it here with the same cast. It's a great cast, and folks should come out and see it, because it's a real interesting hybrid, mixing, again, dramatic scenes being played. And I got to tell you, for an actor, it's amazingly thrilling to be on a stage and finish a scene and then have an entire orchestra just kick in behind you. I'm not talking about a recorded sound cue. Just a beat. You can feel the stage shaking with its, you know, the power of the orchestra. Also, for actors, you know, for us, a theater audience is a couple hundred people. I remember being in Philadelphia saying, what's the size of the house? And the guy said, oh, we got 2,700 today. I was like, whoa, going out in front of 2,700 people and acting is a whole different energy. So I've really, it's really been tremendously fun doing this.
Well, we enjoy everything we get the chance to see you do. And thanks for taking some time to talk with us on the show today.
Well, thank you so much. And listen, I got to say, it's such a treat when people come up to me and they say, hey, I heard The Raven on YPR the other day. So when we did it, I didn't even know that you guys were going to do it every year. I thought it was a one-off. And so it's really been a delight that you guys do this every year.
Actor, director, and Edgar Allan Poe portrayer, Tony Sandias. And now, as promised, we present The Raven.
Once, upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. 'Tis some visitor, I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. Only this, and nothing more. Ah, distinctly, I remember. It was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my book surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, this it is, and nothing more. Presently, my soul grew stronger. Hesitating then no longer, Sir, said I, or Madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I was scarce sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here, I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then, this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, Nevermore. Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we could not help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast above the sculptured bust above his chamber door with such a name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather that he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, Other friends have flown before. On the morrow, he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then, upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet violet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press. Nevermore. Then, methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee. Respite, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether temptest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels named Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of the lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken, quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore.
Actor, director, and Edgar Allan Poe portrayer, Tony Sandias.